It's been the least silly season that you could ever imagine. I think it's the whole trend for Formula One this year, where we could have had so much more fun, but we aren't. But I think, considering the driver market, the big moves might be locked out, and we're only just waiting to see if Red Bull end up doing something very dramatic with Sergio Perez. But guys and girls, there's still one more seat in Formula One that's very much under jeopardy. And today we're going to hype it up, talk so much about it, and of course get to discuss our favorite topic, Sergeant Logan, as well. The main question for today is, are we really going to see Logan Sargeant in Williams next year? I think the answer to that, probably considering the circumstances, would be yes. But every single person here on the Inside Line F1 podcast really disputes it. My name is Somal Arora. I'm the voice of the MotoGP Indian Grand Prix. I am joined by Kunal Shah, the former marketing head of the Force India F1 team, who's also an F1 consultant and an F1 expert for the Viaplay Network in Norway. And of course, to help out with all the numbers behind the story as well, we've got F1 stats guru Sundaram finally back in on the podcast as well. But would I be 100% clear in this, guys? I think we're all unanimously agreeing that anyone barring Logan Sargeant, not my pet, no, Sundaram, not your pup as well, but anyone barring that and Logan Sargeant should be in the Williams seat next year. Clearly, right?
Yes, I suppose so.
What is a long pause about? Honestly, you were thinking, you were considering. Like, me and Kunal have a proper 8-page document for why he shouldn't, but you gave it a second. What's the story behind?
I just wanted to cross check if there were any positives behind Sargeant's stint with Williams, but quite clearly, I think Williams need to look at a different driver for 2024.
Yeah, why does it pain so much? Honestly, is the question I have for you.
I think by any positive, one of the main things that we've always known, and it was adequately clear last year as well, was he being American is a big part in his signing. Doralton Capital, also American, with the whole Liberty Media drive to have an American driver who's, you know, bred through the Liberty Media feeder series, you know, F3, F2, F1, etc. So he's probably been in the right place at the right time to get that drive. But the question that, you know, we are all trying to dig deep into along with data and not just make it all about opinions is, has he really done enough to merit an extension? And should he really get an extension for 2024, right? Guys, that's probably where we're trying to go.
One second. On that front as well, I think if we've all spent 20 minutes analyzing data and every single pointer says no, isn't much of a debate, isn't there, Kunal? So why don't we tell the people what the numbers really say? Because, oh my God, I think at one point I just stopped looking because it just got worse and worse and worse and worse. So where do we begin now?
I can actually vouch for that. When we were preparing all the data before this, Sundaram and I were digging in through stuff and someone was like, guys, can we just start? Guys, I think we've got enough. Can we just start? And by him saying we've got enough to prove our point that he shouldn't, based on performance data, be renewed, right? And I'm also going to put on a hat that I used to put on when I was running the Force India Driver Academy, right? So what is it that you look for in a driver before you choose to go ahead or not with him or her, right? And the first thing, of course, is no crashes, but that's obvious that you don't want your driver to crash. The second thing, of course, is down to the fact that you want to see progression in your driver. By progression, you mean as the season goes, you are seeing your driver become better, faster, getting closer to your teammate, becoming more mature in the cockpit and so on, right? And we typically look at qualifying or race data, but you also see free practice data to see how close the driver has gone. And then you remove outliers like, you know, sometimes you're just testing parts, sometimes the weather is different, sometimes you just don't get in a representative time because the team are trying different things, especially when it comes to sprint weekends and so on. So if you put all that in, right, this is going to be a 3-hour long podcast, right? But the truth of all of this, if you were to, you know, sort of summarize it, is he's had 4 crashes in the last 4 races after the summer break, right? So that's one part. Then the second, what I've done is split into circuits that he's raced at before versus circuits he's not raced at before, right? Because familiarity always helps as well. Now, his average gap across the season to Alexander Albon has been it has been half a second. Even if you were to remove all the circuits he knows and he doesn't know, the gap still remains at half a second, right? So just throwing the numbers out there for you guys and for everybody else.
No, and to add on to that as well, right? There's so much of teammate data that we can also consider. Now, I really want to talk about this qualifying head-to-head bit as well, where every single time this year, Albon has out-qualified Logan Sargeant. For context, last year when Albon was at Latifi as well, Sundaram, Latifi was able to out-qualify Albon a couple of times. And you know when it gets really worse? We saw Nick Tiffrey is actually being sacked from AlphaTauri midway through the season. And his qualifying record actually was strange. In 10 races, he was actually able to beat Tsunoda thrice in quali. And he doesn't have a seat. Our man Logan Sargeant does at the moment in time.
And that's why it doesn't look good on Sargeant. And like Kunal mentioned, the other two important numbers is the fact that Logan Sargeant doesn't have a single point this year. All of the team's points have come via Alex Albon, and he's never out-qualified Albon as well. So these two points don't look very good on his behalf. But probably one of the other reasons why James Vowles seems to want Logan Sargeant next year is also the fact that Williams is really not battling with anyone in the Constructors' Championship. They are at a place in P7. Their target is P7 and they are way behind Alpine, which is, I think, 60, 65 points behind Alpine. If they were closer in a championship fight with another team and Logan Sargeant not scoring points, he would have probably been a little bit more critical, is what I believe. It's not happening at the Aston Martin camp. Quite clearly, we know that Lance Stroll is hampering Aston Martin's chances this year of finishing P2, P3, and P3 or P4, and that they're sliding down. But another fact is that Sargeant not scoring points for the rest of the season is really not going to hamper Williams. They're going to probably end up taking P7. Albon might take a couple of more points through the rest of the season. But yes, he's not scored a single point. And it doesn't really look good, especially when Liam Lawson has scored points. Oscar Piastri has scored points aplenty off lately. But obviously, he's in a better car. But compare yourself even to a Liam Lawson, who's been here only for 4 races. Doesn't look good on Sargeant.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if Lawson is the metric and you know, where you make your comparison, it's very smart because I'm sure Logan Sargeant doesn't want to be compared to Nicholas Latifi, who clearly nobody wanted and was like, you know, suddenly he's not even driving anywhere else. He's gone off to study somewhere, right? If you remember. But I actually beg to differ with what Sundaram said, because yes, Williams is not in a battle for P6 with Alpine, you know, 4 times the points ahead, literally 21 to 84, but Haas is just 9 points behind. We've got sprint races coming up, and you know, we've seen that all it takes is one crazy race, suddenly Haas with 2 really experienced drivers score it in, and then boom, what happens next, you know? So it could well be that they are in a battle for P7 so that they don't drop down. But yes, he's not out qualified Albon. He's not scored a point this year. He's had just 1 Q3 appearance. He's had 12 Q1 exits, compared to Albon, who's had 4 Q3 appearances and only six Q1 exits. Yes, Albon has more experience, etc. But like I said, it's the main fact, which is progression, that really matters. And here's something fun. So we are of course comparing Sargeant in his first year with Albon in maybe what is his third year or whatever number of years he's done across the teams. But if you look at George Russell in his first year at Williams, he had 21 Q1 exits. So at least on that stat, Logan Sargeant actually has a better stat out there.
No, but I think what you've mentioned only makes it worse, because at this moment in time, when you look at that Williams and when you see what they've done at circuits like Zandvoort and Monza, you get a feeling that they have a car that at least on some occasions can do something, as we've constantly seen with Alex Albon. The reason why I'll be so disappointed if they keep Logan Sargeant is not because it's Logan Sargeant. I think he as a driver can really do better in the course of time. But it's a case of a statement of intent. Now, a question for you, Kunal. If you ever want to break a bad habit, right? If you want to become a morning person, I know you've always been a morning person, but in case you do want to become a morning person and then someone calls you to go partying at 10 o'clock in the night, do you make a decision based on who you were yesterday or who you want to be tomorrow? I think most people who write a good self-help book will say what you want to be tomorrow. When they say, right, dress up for the job you like, or maybe act in the way you would want to see yourself in the future. Fake it till you make it, basically. I'll be really disappointed with Williams if they go back to another pay driver in Logan Sargeant when their ambition, intent, actions are all focused in the direction of becoming an upper midfield team. And it just doesn't add up. The behavior and the intent and what they try to show to the world really would seem odd, no, Sundaram? And that's why I think Logan Sargeant really is a problem for them.
Yeah, so, actually that's a great analogy, Saumil, because Williams is progressing. They've made great strides. They've hired a new technical officer, change in management, etc. And at least, you know, from what we know, Logan Sargeant's father doesn't own the team. So at least there are no paternal reasons to, or familial reasons to keep him there, right? But it's a great point. If your car is progressing, if your team is progressing, but your driver is holding you back, should you make that change? And there is a counterpoint to this because, you know, Sundaram said, I'm trying to think of the positives. And to me, the positives are that I would think that maybe after the summer break, he's been a little closer to Albon, if we were to look at it. In Sanfoort, he made it to Q3 for the first time this season, but he crashed. In Monza, he was 15th while Albon was 6th. In yep. Singapore, his first time around, 18th versus 14th. And he's clearly not been as close as anyone would have wanted, but probably been closer. But he's also crashed, which means he's also trying really hard. So maybe James Vowles just sitting down. And remember, James Vowles also comes from a racing background, right? So he's probably just sitting down and saying, you know what? Let's calm him down. We can't get rid of him till the end of the season. We want him to succeed as well, et cetera, right? So it's his way of trying to just mentor the driver. And this is also where I will quote the great Franz Tost. And I say the great Franz Tost because while we herald Red Bull and Helmut Marko for Vettel and Verstappen and Ricardo and the great, you know, drivers that have come from that junior team, they've also been conditioned by Franz Tost. And Franz Tost has always maintained that for a driver to succeed in modern day Formula One, you need 3 seasons. And that's what happened, or that's what is happening to Yuki Tsunoda, right? But am I trying to say that Logan Sargeant needs 3 seasons? Maybe he does. But your question of intent is where I'll also put in a question of spark. Mm-hmm. When Oscar Piastri, there are 3 rookies this season. Oscar Piastri, in just 14 races, got a 3-year contract extension. We all saw that spark visibly. Nobody needed to tell us, even when the McLaren was not doing well, right? Liam Lawson, in just those 4 races, we've seen that spark. Alfa Tauri, comparable, really poor car, but against Yuki Tsunoda, etc., he's shown that spark, which is why everybody's upset, saying, oh my God, you know, Lawson's not got a seat for 24. But will somebody feel upset? Will you guys feel upset if Sargeant doesn't have a seat in 24?
No, honestly, for the person, yes. But honestly, it's just that, right? Where Williams want to be today is something that they could far rather achieve with someone else pushing the car in that extent as well. Like Haas, I know they've not had the best year so far, but it's way, way better than where it was last year. Having 2 experienced drivers helping out with development is quite something. And then on the odd occasion, remember a couple of minutes ago, Kunal, you mentioned that maybe one crazy race, I think Sundaram, it was you, but one crazy race, Haas, both experienced drivers, you never know what they can pull out. That factor you can never say with Williams, because at this moment in time, unfortunately, it seems like a certainty that only one of them is going to perform. And that's already like walking into a fight, walking into like a taekwondo fight, but knowing that your ankle isn't working properly. Like, what are you going to do about it? Punch? It's not going to work, is it?
No, this is definitely not the Williams of the past couple of seasons. Surely they don't expect to be in the points in every single race, but they have come a fair distance from where this team was in 2019 or 2020, where they were not scoring points through the season. So, like I said, they probably don't expect to score points in every race, but when there is that opportunity for the car to do well, Alex Albon has been able to convert that. And it seems sometimes Logan Sargeant is somewhere close to Albon, but then he kind of just drops it, similarly to what happened in Sanford. When both of them got into Q3, I did exclaim saying that, oh, okay, even Logan Sargeant is in Q3, but then he goes and crashes after his first quali lap. So it's important that when the opportunity does present itself to you, that you take it with both hands, and probably Sargeant has not done that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That is so well said. And okay, before we wrap up, I'm going to just put it out there. So, okay, one theory before I put things out there is sometimes drivers don't perform well, but their team actually comes out to back them. Yes, it's for psychological reasons, but a lot of times, and I'm not going to name drivers here, it could also be for commercial reasons. Drivers can have it in their contracts, right? You cannot speak negatively about me for more than X number of times. It's difficult to measure that, but the commercial pressures can be so high, especially for smaller teams who are relying on driver-led sponsorships, that you're just like, okay, not only is the driver bringing in points, the driver's also bringing in money. And of course, in this case, the driver's not bringing in points, right? But my theory here was there are a couple of drivers on the grid who can still make it to that Williams, right? Nick De Vries is signed with Mahindra for Formula E, so he's out, and he actually had a good debut in that Williams. Mick Schumacher, Toto Wolff is aggressively trying to pitch Mick Schumacher for that Williams. And, you know, we've typically seen if Wolff pitches for his drivers, he ends up getting a seat, as we've seen before, whether it was Ocon at Renault or Bottas at Sauber, etc. I hope Mick Schumacher gets a second shot in, because he stayed 1 year out. Staying the second year out, it gets only increasingly difficult for somebody to then sign him up, I would say. So I would definitely love to see a Mick there, knowing fully well that Red Bull will not release Lawson to go there.
Ooh, that'd be interesting, right? Because Red Bull are in the tricky spot, but they want Lawson as well. But no, I really agree that Mick would be the best candidate, because who else really comes to mind, Sundaram? Nobody from F2 really has also grabbed both the hands and said, yes, this is going to be my seat.
No.
Not that you need to. Sargent was P5 in F2 anyway, so.
No, not specifically. I wouldn't say there's a specific contender for Williams in specific. Maybe for other teams, maybe for teams like Alfa Romeo. But specifically for Williams, if there is one person who I think should probably be driving for Williams next year, is maybe Liam Lawson. Maybe not even Mick, in my opinion, but I would really love to see what Lawson is able to do in that Williams car next year. I think he's done exceptionally well in the cup, in the few opportunities that he's had this year. I mean, he doesn't even know if he's going to be racing at the next Grand Prix, looking at how Ricardo is recovering, but he's taking it race by race. In that sense, I think Lawson has been doing extremely well, and I would absolutely love to see him in the Williams car, and I believe he'd probably do better than Sargent. But I think the question is James Vowles looking only at the ability to score points, or he's looking at something beyond that as well?
That's a great point, because, you know, typically over the years, and this is for all the new fans of Formula One, each time a team scores points with both drivers or one, they end up getting more money from Formula One, assuming depending on where they stand in the Constructors' Championship. And that's what we call the Concord Agreement, right? And typically, a team has to decide whether you get a pay driver who struggles to score points, but you are guaranteed some amount of driver-led sponsorship, or you get a driver who has a higher probability of scoring points, so you get more money from Formula One at the end of the season. And of course, better performance also means that the team itself gets more attractive to external sponsorships, right? And this is always something the teams end up juggling. And I would love to see a Lawson at Williams. Could it be that it's Mercedes versus Red Bull yet again to place a second driver at Williams? And I'll tell you the historic case here. When Albon was loaned by Red Bull to Williams a couple of years ago, the other driver Mercedes was pushing at that time was Nick De Vries, because he was a Mercedes simulator driver. Now, this year, could it be Schumacher, who is a Mercedes simulator driver, versus Lawson for Williams next year? And at the end of the day, Red Bull settled this by just paying some money for Albon's seat that time.
So does Williams then become a C team for Red Bull, the B team being Alpha Tauri, and Williams having Albon and Lawson? Probably that makes it a C team, wouldn't it?
That's not who they really are, right? Come on. They can be better than that, which is why it's so annoying to hear this entire chatter about, do we really want Logan Sargeant in there? And I know commercial sponsorships are actually genuinely very, very helpful, but where do you want to be in the future? How far are they? Because in my head, looking at the performances, I think they're at that stage where they really can afford to take that risk of having two good drivers. But folks, that's about it from our end. What are your thoughts? We really, really struggle to think of a positive, but can you think of one? Let us know by following us on social media and keeping in touch with our next events as well, because we're going to be back at Car Social this Sunday for the Qatar GP F1 Pit Stop. So check out the link in the description of this episode to join us over there as well. But until then, folks, this is it. We'll be back with the Qatar GP preview shortly. Stay tuned on the Inside Line F1 podcast, everyone, and see you this Sunday. Bye-bye.